good afternoon, and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we're live for an hour each weekday afternoon. And from 2 to 3 in the afternoon is the time that we're live. This would be on Pacific time. If you happen to be listening to the live broadcast, I invite you to call in with your questions or comments. If you have questions about the Bible or comments that are perhaps balancing comments or correcting comments to things that have been misspoken here previously, so that we can get things straight. And if you'd like to be on the program, we have a couple lines open right now that you can get through. The number is 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. I have an announcement to make for those of you listening in Santa Cruz or nearby. And that is, of course, I'm going to be in Santa Cruz this weekend. This only happens about once a month. And we have an open Bible discussion, Q&A, in a home in Santa Cruz, usually the first Saturday of each month, and that's coming up this Saturday. So if you're interested in joining us, you are who it's for. Those of you who listen to the program and would like to participate with others who listen to the program in an open discussion about biblical topics. This is this Saturday night at 7, and if you would like specific information, address, and all that, you can find it at our website, thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. If you go there, you click the link that says announcements, and there you will find all you need to know about this. That's this Saturday night in Santa Cruz. Our first caller today is Brad from Kuski, Idaho. And we also have a line open for you at 1-800-438-5090. Brad, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Steve.
Hi.
You know, last week, I think it was Tuesday, you were talking about Philemon with the slavery issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like, that me and you would disagree on this, it seems like Paul is saying that slavery is wrong. Now, on verse 8, he says, though I might be very bold in Christ to command you what is fitting, yet for love's sake I'd rather appeal. Seems to me like he's saying he has the authority to command Philemon to act, to do what is fitting, and that would be to let Onesimus free. What do you think?
I think that Paul's assumption is that because of the kind of relationship he and Philemon have, namely that Paul actually is Philemon's father in the Lord, and as he says to Philemon, you even owe me your life, I think Paul is saying, you know, I think I'm into you for this, you know. I think I could request this. I think I could even forcefully push for this, namely that you release him and send him to me. But I don't want to do that. And that's not the kind of leader I am. So I don't think he's necessarily saying that, you know, slavery is evil. If he did want to say that, Paul had many opportunities to say it because he addressed slaves and their owners on at least three different occasions besides in Philemon. He did in, you know, Ephesians, those, Colossians, and Second Timothy, or First
right,
Timothy.
On those three occasions, he uses the word bondservant, which is the same word that's used in verse 16 of Philemon, slave. So it's number 1401, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at bondservant, even Christ made himself a bondservant, the same word, 1401.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Christ volunteered to make himself a bondservant. So what I'm thinking on those other scriptures you just mentioned, that he is basically talking about an employer-employee relationship in our vernacular, in our way of talking, because I see that bondservant most of the time means a willing servant. Even that employee in Luke 16 that was that was a steward, if you read that whole scripture in 13, that same steward who is in charge is described as a 1401 slave or bondservant, yet he says in 16:3, I believe it is, that he's going to lose his job, and that's why he's you know, being shrewd. So that same word is used as somebody who can, who's about ready to be fired and would have to look for work elsewhere. So I'm thinking that these things that you talked about, these other scriptures, Paul is saying, hey, you know, employers, be good to your employees. Employees, be good to your employers. Rather than making a statement that slavery is a moral, just, right, biblical thing. The slavery that we think of, which is owning somebody. You know, and then the other thing, verse 14 of Philemon, that your good deed might be, might not be by compulsion. Well, when I look up good deed in other scriptures, it seems like it's a the typical commandment of a Christian. Same with what is fitting in verse 8. When you look up the word fitting and compare it with other scriptures, it's the same word that Paul uses when he's commanding people to not cheat on your wives or whatever. I have those scriptures written down, but I didn't want to drag it out.
Sure.
And then also verse 21, having confidence in your obedience. I believe that he's saying, this is Paul to Philemon, that Paul's having confidence in Philemon's obedience to Christianity, to God, to the new covenant, that you don't involve yourself in the covetousness of slavery. Because if you think about it, no man has to have a slave. He can just pay him a good enough wage, and he doesn't have to be a slave. Anybody who would hold a slave against their will is covetous. They're covetous. I just don't see how holding somebody against their will is in any way, shape, or form a Christian way to be.
What about keeping your child under your control when the child would rather go out and be free?
Right, and I think that's a different subject. That would be until that child is, you know, approximately 20 years old. But you wouldn't want to keep your child under control when he's 30 and you're 60. That would be a sin.
And that would be a sin. Why? What if your child actually needed your care, and so you let the child stay with you on your terms?
Well, see, once
see,
again, it's on
here's
your.
Here's the thing, Brad. Here's the thing, Brad. When I don't see the word doulos, which is 1401 in the Strong's. I don't see the word doulos as a hired servant, and I really can't find a lexicon that does. A diaconus means a servant. Our word deacon comes from it. That a diaconus is not a slave, but a servant. A doulos is the ordinary word in the Greek for a slave. Now you mentioned the servant in Luke 16. The steward, yeah, who's going to lose his job? I don't think the word doulos is used in that chapter.
I looked it up, and it is. And
okay, I just looked it up, and I can't find it in that chapter.
16:13.
Let me see here.
Also, Jesus Christ uses 1401 in about himself in Colossians, where when Paul says that he humbled himself, that Jesus took upon himself and made himself a 1401, bondservant.
Okay, I'm looking at Luke 16:13. I'm looking at Luke 16:13. It says, no servant can serve two masters. Is that what you're talking about?
So maybe I gave you the wrong one. And of course, yeah, that word servant is 1401, yes.
No, it's actually, that word servant is 3610. So I think that's diaconus.
Okay, well, sorry about that. I guess I got to do better.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I can't find it. So, I mean, if you could find that, it would be helpful. The lexicons I have translate doulos as slave. And certainly the word slave had an established meaning in the Roman Empire, which is the context in which Paul's writing. And there were hired servants too, and they were called diaconus, which is also a word the Bible uses in some places. But I'm not necessarily buying it. What I understand is this, that just as there were understood roles of children in submission to their parents and wives in submission to their husbands, there were understood roles of slaves in submission to their masters. Now, we really have a hard time with that, and that's primarily because we've only seen unjust slavery in the modern world. We've never seen just slavery, where a person is actually voluntarily sold himself as a slave. But once a person does that, they are a slave. And that's what they did. It's sort of like if you sign on a mortgage on a 30-year mortgage on a house, and you're 60 years old, you're a slave to that mortgage for the rest of your life. Let's just say you wouldn't be able to, in an economy like ours, be able to sell it, and you're stuck with the mortgage for the rest of your life. That's something you got yourself into, and it's not unjust. It's just something that you agreed to, and now you're kind of stuck with it. And same thing, if someone sells himself into slavery because his finances are such that he can't take care of himself, so he sells himself into slavery, well, he's in that situation for life, unless his master wants to give him his freedom. But to give him his freedom is to give him something different than what he agreed to or even necessarily wanted.
I agree with you there. I'm saying that involuntary slavery.
Okay.
It seems to me like you're saying even involuntary slavery under some circumstances is okay.
Well,
I firmly believe that voluntary slavery is okay.
All I can say is that slaves were made more than one way, of course, in biblical times. But a very common way was for a man to sell himself into slavery because he'd fallen on hard times financially. And you know, Paul doesn't distinguish that. We don't know which kind of slave Philemon was, for example, whether Philemon had sold himself into slavery or not, or had been a prisoner of war. We don't know those things. What we do know is that a person might be a slave and have a good master and be very happy with it. And since slavery was very common in the Roman world, and Paul wrote to Christians who had slaves, he never said it was immoral for them to keep slaves, but he did tell them that they should treat their slaves kindly, like brothers, and so forth.
I guess my position on that is he was probably talking to, I would say most, well, I looked it up on Wikipedia. They say that, and you have to research it, you know, you have to, it's not just right there, but if you follow links, that less than 20% of the Roman population were slaves. So I would say that Paul was mostly talking about, once again, hired servants. You know, I went to Luke chapter 16, verse 13. Mm-hmm. That word servant is 1401.
Okay, I'm looking at it. Is that where it says no servant can serve two masters?
Yeah.
Okay, my Bible that I'm looking at says it's 36:10. So I'm.
Wow, I'll have to look that up.
I'll have to look it up somewhere else too.
Yeah, mine might be wrong. And then, so the reason why I compared that with the stewardship, which is the word 36:23 in verse 2 of the same chapter, is because it's the same subject. So it seems to me like he's a bond servant, but he has a higher job as a steward, like a boss. Now,
the trouble we have here is that neither you or I are really Greek scholars. We're looking at numbers and the Strong's Concordance. And one thing is, it's possible that you've done some research on this word outside of this conversation, but I've encountered the word doulos in commentaries and in scripture and in hearing people lecture and so forth. And it's always been said that diakonos is the word for a servant and doulos is the word for a slave. And doulos is 1401.
It's in Philippians 2:7, where Jesus Christ is a 1401, which is a bond servant. But it
no
says
question.
He made himself.
Yes.
So he volunteered into it. Same with 1 Peter 2:16, Ephesians 6:5, 1 Timothy 6:1, Colossians. I mean, it's always bondservant. I mean, Jesus Christ, I mean, Paul has called
himself
1401.
Are you using a King James Version?
Yes.
Yeah, the King James Version never uses the word slave in the New Testament, I think. It only uses the word bondservant. But the Greek word is the word for slave.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, I mean, Brad, I mean, it looks like we are not, neither you nor I have sufficient, facility in the Greek to really prove our points one way or the other. But as I understand it, Paul was addressing a situation where a very large percentage of Christians were, in fact, slaves, and he addresses their owners also. And again, Paul, if he addresses owners of slaves, he could say, now, if you are the owner of a slave who volunteered to be a slave, then, of course, that's fine. If your slaves are of another sort, then you really should let them go because slavery is immoral. And we just don't find that. We don't find that taught in the Old or the New Testament, nor, frankly, anywhere in the world until modern times.
Yeah. Well, what about the command to not be covetous, to not be greedy, that the rich must share,
yeah,
and to love. Yeah, it just seems like involuntary slavery wouldn't fulfill those commandments.
Well, if a man has a slave and it's his duty to feed him and house him and clothe him, and he doesn't do so, he's being a greedy man. He should meet his obligations. But the same thing is true if he has a hired servant. If he doesn't pay him what he owes him, he's being a greedy man. But if he has a hired servant who's not as rich as he is, I don't think that Paul or anyone else saying that you can't be greedy is suggesting that you have to pay the guy who mows your lawn as much as you make. I mean, you might as well mow your own lawn if you're going to do that. But in other words, the Bible doesn't say anywhere that people are all supposed to make the same amount of money.
Right.
And therefore, that there would be different levels of prosperity would be the case in society. And those who have extra are urged to help those who don't have as much. But, you know, if a person is a slave because he's destitute, and a man says, okay, I'll buy you, and then takes good care of his slave, the slave is never as rich as his master, but his master might be very generous to him nonetheless.
So these labor laws in modern societies, I think those are Christ enlightenment laws, where somebody wouldn't be allowed to do that. They just must pay a decent wage so they don't have to sell themselves. So you don't see a Christian enlightenment there with labor laws to stop slavery, apparently.
Well, you know, I don't have an awful lot of knowledge of how economics works. You know, I'm more interested in just what is just and what's not just. For example, if I go to work for a person and he says, I'll give you $2 an hour, then I think he should give me $2 an hour. If I say, what are you talking about? I'd never work for $2 an hour. Then he doesn't hire me. I work for someone else. I don't really, you know, I just think that justice means you give somebody what they have right to expect and what you've agreed to.
But many times in history, and I was just thinking about it a lot of times, most of the time, the rich man has stolen property. It really is true. I mean, if you look at history, most of the time, the super rich are involved in some kind of scheming. So, well, just thought I'd run those scriptures by, see how you took that. I really appreciate you giving me the time.
Okay, Brad. It's good talking to you. Hope to see you again soon.
Okay, bye.
God bless. Bye now. Okay, we'll talk next to Dwayne from Alexandria, Virginia. Dwayne, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hey, nice talking to you, Steve. Nice talking to you again. God bless you.
Yeah, now let me think. Did you used to call me years ago, or am I thinking of someone else from Alexandria?
Well, no. It was. I think the last time was probably earlier, maybe a little bit earlier this year.
Okay.
Even though I listen more often than call. But
all right, just wondering, because I remember Alexandria, Virginia, but I thought I remembered more than one person calling from there. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, good. My question today is about, maybe you can help me with this, about evangelism
or
witnessing. And I guess I thought by mentioning in 2010, around February, March 2010, I was born again. And sometime thereafter, like maybe a couple months later, I mean, you know, after being on fire, you know, I was starting to get bottlenecked other than my family, my immediate family, my wife and kids, but it was almost like I had to go beyond and share with others, you know, especially the lost. It was like a little burden, you know?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I ended up ordering some tracks online. You probably heard of the Chick tracks and things. And I remember going, I was in that summer, I had a job in Miami, and it was, I believe, August of 2010. And my personality is just not, I normally don't talk to people. You know, I was the kind of guy that I would avoid talking if I had to, strangers, you know.
Uh-huh.
Friends, I'm all open to friends and family, but
sure.
Strangers, no way. But I felt this urge, like, you know, you need to go out tonight, you know, and pass them out. And I'm just like, oh, no, this can't be, you know, I don't think that, you know. But anyway, long story short, I ended up going. And I remember trying to make up every excuse. Like, if I don't find a place to park, I'm going back. There's no place to park, so that's fine. And end up, a parking space opened up. And I just felt like a voice was in my head that said, you know, who else is out here tonight doing this? You know, mm-hmm. It was South Beach. So I went out, spent some time out, even talked to someone. And it was a, you know, and then after that, it's been like, you know, every now and then I get that burden and I'll just go out. You know, sometimes it's spontaneous. But my question is, you know, sometimes time will go by, like maybe a month or so, and, you know, I might not get that same burden.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if, I guess one of my first question is that just evangelism to you, or is that just maybe just witnessing? And then
when you go out and you talk about the Lord with people, if you're sharing the gospel with them, that's what evangelism is. Now, witnessing is a word that some people have used. I grew up using the word witnessing for when you do personal soul, when you need to be witnessing. But that's a word not used in the Bible that way. The word witness or testimony, which are the same word in the Greek and the New Testament, they talk about testifying to something you know. For example, the apostles who had seen Jesus rise from the dead, it says they went out and gave testimony about the resurrection of the dead. They were witnesses of his resurrection, just like you might be called to court to be a witness to an accident you saw or something. They were witnesses to the resurrection, the Bible says. And that means that they'd seen Jesus raised from the dead, and they were selected by him to be among those who would go out and tell the world about it. So witnessing, technically in the Bible, just means bearing a testimony to something you've seen. In that sense, most of us don't witness. At least we don't witness to what the apostles witnessed, because we weren't there. We didn't see Jesus rise from the dead, though we could easily bear witness to what God has done in our life. In other words, I could say, well, I was there when I got saved. I was there to see this change in my life. I was there when these prayers were answered. I was there. You know, if you give testimony to things you actually have seen and experienced, it's sort of a similar thing. Now, the Bible doesn't use the word witness that way for us, I don't believe, but it could apply to us insofar as we have seen something, we have had an experience with God, and we can testify to it. In that sense, we can witness to it. Now, if you're out there sharing your testimony about what God has done in your life, then I'd call that bearing witness or testifying about Christ. If you're out there sharing four spiritual laws or something like that, then I would say you're evangelizing. The two things can work together in the same conversation, obviously. And very often it is the case that a person is sharing their testimony and it works into a presentation of the gospel itself. So it's not as if these two things are, you know, separate by a thick black borderline. But technically witnessing means bearing witness to something that you know from experience or have seen. And evangelizing technically means preaching the gospel.
Right. Okay. Right. I definitely don't feel like I would go beyond, what I feel like I've definitely been told, kind of laid on as a burden to do, was, you know, share the gospel, hand out tracts, and definitely share the gospel, of course, but maybe not to the point of preaching out loud.
If you give people the gospel, I think you're evangelizing. Now, in biblical times, they didn't have printing presses, so they couldn't hand out tracts. The only way they knew how to get information across was verbally, so they would bear verbal witness. If they had had printing presses, if they could have printed up Bibles and tracts and handed them out and so forth, insofar as those were communicating the gospel, the same as if it was spoken, that's evangelizing too. It's just using a different technology, a different medium. Just like I'm using the radio now, they didn't have radio back then. So someone could say, well, you know, is this, if I was preaching the gospel here, which is not what I do most of the time. Most of the time I'm answering questions about the Bible. I'm not necessarily evangelizing here. Not that I'm against it. It's just not what usually happens in the course of the hour here. But if I was here presenting the gospel to sinners, I'd be doing evangelism. I'd be doing it on the radio. It'd be a technology the apostles didn't use, but it's still evangelism.
Right. Praise God for that.
And the use of tracts can be very good. Now, I will say about Jack Chick's tracts, he's got dozens or scores of them now. When I was a kid, Jack Chick's tracts numbered about four titles. You know, there was Holy Joe, there was This Was Your Life, there was The Demon's Nightmare, there was Somebody Goofed. That was about it. Those are his first tracts that he made, and I thought they were pretty good. I still think they're pretty good. They're not exactly the flavor that I think is it would be the best, but I think they're very effective. Later on, Jack Chick got into making a lot of tracts against the Catholic Church and about the Illuminati and a whole bunch of sort of quasi-political things. And so not all of his tracts, are really gospel presentations. I mean, he has tracts out promoting the King James Version only. Yes, you know, I mean, he's got his issues that he likes to get across. So not all of his tracts are really gospel presentations at all. Some of them are not even very accurate information. But insofar as his early tracts were simply an attempt to tell a story that conveyed the gospel to sinners, the use of tracts like that would, I think, be called evangelism.
Right, and you know, I that's funny. I agree with you 100%. There's definitely been some that I was convicted not to pass out, like ones that talk about, you know, there was a couple that mentioned about Preacher Bratcher and things. You know, those things I just, but the ones like this was your life.
Yeah.
You know, was just, you know, like you said, just the gospel or, yeah, the ones that are pretty basic. That Somebody Goofed one was a pretty good one, too, like you said.
Yeah, I like those old ones. I used to read those when I was a kid. In fact, they inspired me. I'm a cartoonist myself, and I drew over 50 or, well, over 40 titles of comic tracts in my day, most of which are not still printed, but they were back in the 70s. And so, I was inspired, frankly, by Jack Chick's tracts when I was a kid. To do the same thing when I got older. And so he was the pioneer of Christian comic books.
That's great. Hey, that's great. Only one other question, Steve, is just on the same subject. I know that there's a fine line with me, as you know, I have a family and kids, wife and kids. So I know that there's a balance, and I'm not always told to go, man, I have to evangelize at home. But I noticed that there's sometimes where the church I joined, once I became a member at the church that I go to now, it's a Baptist church, but they believe that the gifts are for today, which is important to me.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they did in the new members class that I thought was kind of funny, you might think so too, maybe I'm sure you've heard about it anyway, is that when they were trying to get a sense of what your gifts were, other than asking you have you cast out demons before and things like that, but it was like a questionnaire I filled out, and a question,
yeah, like a spiritual spiritual gifts inventory, questionnaire, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like a personality test or something you might get from a psychologist.
Yeah, that actually one of those accompanied it, and one of those accompanied was they did one like that too.
That is kind of funny, actually. So what did they find out? That you're an evangelist?
Yeah, put me right there. I kind of figured it would be, because all the questions. Yeah. I was just like, well.
To tell you the truth, it sounds like that's the case. I mean, you're talking about this burden that comes on you to evangelize. If there's no one putting you on a guilt trip about that, and that's just coming from your own heart, then that's probably God's moving you, and it probably does mean that you're an evangelist. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily a good evangelist, though you could be excellent. I mean, what I mean is, if someone's called to teach, for example, that doesn't mean they're a good teacher. If a person's called to teach, they really had better do some research and make sure they learn what it is they're supposed to teach and learn it correctly so they don't become a false teacher. Likewise, a person who's got an evangelistic gift, it doesn't mean that automatically, every word that comes out of his mouth is going to be accurate, as if some supernatural thing comes over him. We need to make sure we are preaching the gospel. We need to make sure we're Christ-like, and so forth. But, yeah, I mean, having the motivation you do sounds to me like you probably are an evangelist. I don't know. I don't know otherwise. Now, you became a Christian only, 3 years ago or 2 years ago?
Only in 2010.
Yeah. Okay. So are your wife and children Christians?
Yes.
Okay. So are they sympathetic to you preaching the gospel?
Yes.
They like that?
I mean, they're sympathetic. They're sympathetic to me going out. I mean, I don't go out much. I mean, to be honest with you, Steve, maybe other than with the church, we go out once a month. Other than that, maybe once every other month or something. Once a month average.
How old are your kids?
Twice a month total.
How old are your kids?
Now, they're 4, 6, 8, and 13.
Okay. The younger one's a little young, but I was thinking when you go out and do this, do you ever take any of your kids out with you?
Well, no, I haven't. The only time they're with me, you know, is they're with me when I pass out tracks sometimes, you know, just on a whim, you know, hey, maybe at a drive through or something like that.
Okay.
And so they've seen me and they know.
That's good.
And they'll take some tracks too, and they get encouraged sometimes to at least, you know, hey, I'll take this to school. They've done that on occasion.
Yeah, the reason I ask is sometimes I'll tell you that doing evangelism is one thing that can really get you turned on to your faith.
Yeah.
Now, you've only been a Christian a short time, so you're probably turned on your faith still from your conversion. Some people, their faith gets a little, I guess, matter of fact. They kind of take things for granted as they get older. And I find that, you know, going out and witnessing, having a good conversation with an unbeliever about the Lord can just make you feel, you know, like you're, you know, back on top of things again, because you're actually out there. You're out there putting out as well as getting in. You know, we get fed, and we whether it's at church or through books or radio or whatever things, we can get fed all day long. But if we don't ever give out, then we stagnate. And, I think going out and handing out tracts, if they're good tracts, I think handing out tracts can be a really good way to, you know, start conversations with people about the Lord. And those conversations really do kind of renew your first love in a way. And I'm talking not so much to you, Duane, since you're still a pretty young Christian yourself, but people out there who maybe haven't done any witnessing for a long time, haven't done any soul winning for a long time. It's really a good thing. And to get your kids involved, it's really good too, because I believe it gets them into the mentality of taking a stand for God in a world that disagrees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Duane, there something else, some question that you wanted to answer besides that?
Oh, no, I'm good. And thank you so much. You've answered it, and God bless you, Steve, and thank you. And you know, like when you were mentioning about teaching and having to know, like needing to be, make sure you're correct, I think it's the same with evangelism, because me personally, I was a, in the 90s, I lived my life out as a false convert, you know, one of those guys who, you know, hey, I walk up to an altar and I repeated, you know, a sinner's prayer or Romans 10.
Yeah.
So I know now, you know, the real thing. So
I know that when I was younger, I used to go out witnessing, and I didn't really know the gospel very correctly. I knew the gospel as it had been passed down to me from the denomination I was in. But as I got older and read the Bible and found out that what I was presenting was not the message that the apostles presented, or that Jesus presented. And so I used to hear other people witness, and at times think, ooh, you know, it'd make me cringe to think they think they're sharing the gospel, but they're really giving a message that's not really biblical. So if I was doing evangelism a lot, which I used to do when I was younger, and I love doing it, I've been so busy with other ministry, I don't get out there on the streets very much anymore. But if I was doing it a lot, I really want to make sure that I've got the message the same as what the Bible gives, because sometimes we just pass on the message that was preached to us when we became Christians, and a lot of times it's not as balanced as it could be. Now, for example, you take Jack Chick's tracks. Jack Chick, I think he's got the gospel in there, essentially, about Jesus' death and resurrection, but it's a strong emphasis of many of his tracks of people just being thrown into the lake of fire at the end of the story. Was Your Life, but lots of his tracks end that way. You know, the last picture in the book is the angel throwing some guy into a pit of hell with flames coming out and him screaming and stuff. I mean, now that's called good preaching to some people, but you know, there was a time when I thought hellfire preaching was the best, you know, most uncompromising kind of preaching, until I found out that the apostles never preached that way, or at least if they did, we have no record of it. We have record of their preaching in the book of Acts. We don't ever mentioning hell or heaven. That's not what they preached. So, I mean, it took me a while to see, because you get these blinders and you just read the Bible through the blinders that fit what you were taught. And sometimes it takes years to see, wait, the Bible's not saying it's not saying the same thing that they told me, you know? And anyway, but you're on the right track. I think if you get some good tracks, I think just being out there sharing the Lord is something to keep you on top of things in your spiritual walk, as long as you're responding to a burden that God's given you. Well, Dwayne, I'm going to run.
Right. Thank you so much, Steve. God bless you. Definitely. Nice talking to you, as always.
Thanks for your call, brother. God bless your work and your family. Okay, bye now.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to The Narrow Path, and we have lines open for you right now. If you want to call, the number is 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. And my friend John's going to make an announcement right now, and we'll be right back to take your calls. Please stay tuned.
Can a person be genuinely saved and later lost? Does a person really have free will to choose his own eternal destiny, or has all that been settled by God before he was born? If we say that man has free will, does that imply that God is not sovereign? As you may know, these are some of the key concerns in the ongoing controversy between Calvinism and Arminianism. Do you know which viewpoint was taught by Jesus, the apostles, the early church? Is there any practical importance to these issues today? In a 9-lecture series entitled God's Sovereignty and Man's Salvation, Steve Gregg presents a very balanced and biblically thorough treatment of this controversial issue. Steve is not a Calvinist. However, all Christians should acquaint themselves with responsibly held viewpoints of other Christians who understand the Scriptures differently than they do. The series God's Sovereignty and Man's Salvation, as well as hundreds of other stimulating lectures, can be downloaded in MP3 format without charge from our website, thenarrowpath.com. There's no charge for anything at our website, thenarrowpath.com. Visit us there and you'll be amazed at all you have been missing. That web address again is www.thenarrowpath.com.
Yeah, like the man said, we got lots of resources at our website, and they are all free. Hundreds of lectures, MP3 files you can just download on topics galore, as well as verse-by-verse lectures through the whole Bible. Commentary by yours truly. And so if you're interested in any of those resources, just visit thenarrowpath.com. You can just download them. We don't ask you to sign up. Join, get a new password. You have enough passwords already. You don't have to give us your email address. We don't even know that you've been there. You just go and take what you want. It's like being able to walk into a candy store, and there's no cash register. You just walk in, take what you want, and take it with you. And so that's at thenarrowpath.com. That's thenarrowpath.com. Michael from Santee is our next caller. Also, we have a line open for you at 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. Michael, thanks for calling. Welcome to The Narrow Path.
Hi, Steve. Good to talk to you again.
Yo.
I'm having a little bit of a problem, and I wanted to discuss with you. And it's really pretty hard to define. That's why I'm calling too. It has to do with the heart and motives, and I'm finding, even now after being a Christian quite a long time, and part of that kind of being a hypocrite, I'm finding to change behavior and to change, especially to change the heart, is turning out to be quite a task, because I've gotten to the point where I don't really trust myself sometimes and trust my motives.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring a bell?
Well, sure. I mean, it sounds very familiar. I mean, it's kind of a normal human experience, I'm afraid. But it's one that we do want to get over, of course. When you say you don't trust your motives, you mean that when you do things for God, you're not sure whether you're doing them to please God or man? Or when you do things for people, you're not sure if you're trying to manipulate them or if you just love them in a disinterested way? I mean, what is it that you don't trust about your own motives?
Yeah, I think the first. I'm finding that I'm not quite sure why I'm doing this, and sometimes I may be doing something that in my heart I know I really don't want to do, and I don't know if that's my sinful nature or if that's me. And even becoming a Christian, I'm not even 100% sure I trust my motives about that, because am I becoming a Christian just to get my fire insurance, or so to speak, or
right.
am I doing it out of a real, true, heartfelt love for God?
Right. Well, how long have you been a Christian, Michael?
I've been a Christian for about 35 years.
Okay.
So quite a long time. But a lot of that is spotted with failure, mm-hmm. times of doing things and being surprised that I could actually still do something like that and be a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many times like that in my life.
Have you had times of renewal in your life where you realized, wow, I've been really lukewarm, or I've been really compromised, I really need to just serve God?
Well, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is I started having some physical problems, health issues, which I've discussed with you before,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of put me on my back, where I was having to do some soul searching and think about all the years of my life, and having a lot of memories, over the last even 30 years or whatever.
You know, when something like that comes up and kind of scares you into getting serious about God, you can really wish that you'd gotten serious about God without that. You know, you kind of wish, serious about God because God is good, because God is wonderful, because God deserves it, because I really ought to give God what I owe him, rather than, I might die, or my quality of life is going downhill. You know, I might lose something important. I guess I'll get right with God now. You really do have reason to wish that you had gotten right with God under better circumstances. But the fact that you get right with God under these circumstances doesn't mean it's not legitimate. You might be kind of kicking yourself, saying, why didn't I get right with God before there was this kind of motivation? But the real issue is, do you get right with God under these circumstances? You know, trials like this tend to drive people one way or the other with reference to God. There are people who have health issues and other losses in their lives that really afflict them, and they use those as an excuse not to get close to God, but to run from God, to be bitter against God, to become an atheist, or to act like one, to try to punish God for, you know, providences that don't seem to be very good providences in their life. So they actually turn from God. Whereas other people experiencing the very same kinds of troubles, it wakes them up. They come to their senses, like the prodigal son. The prodigal son, you remember, was far from God, but then, you know, there was a famine. He was, really brought very low to hunger and to poverty and to a demeaning subsistence level of work at a job that was filthy and shameful. And, you know, and it says he came to his senses and said, you know, I better get back to my father. It's better there. And, you know, the guy should have come back to his father without all that. But the fact that he came under those circumstances is better than none at all. I mean, it's a strange thing. I don't know what motivates one person one way and one another, but all people have trials, and some people's trials truly make them bitter and drive them into a place of being angry at God. Other people, it softens their heart. It makes them introspective. It makes them want to reach out and find God, who they haven't been close enough to. And it sounds like you're of the second type, and that's a good thing. I mean, your story could have been better, obviously. I mean, you can think of ways that it could have been better, but it could have been worse too. I mean, better late than never. Better to come to God when you're at the bottom of the barrel, than to never come to God. If you shouldn't be afflicting yourself over much about the fact that you've come to God late or on these terms. I mean, you can always carry with you a sobering realization of your own sinfulness. I think all Christians need to do that. Paul carried with him forever a shame about having persecuted the church. He mentions it against himself, even in some of his latest epistles, like 2 Timothy. I mean, there's times where he says, I don't even deserve being apostle because I persecuted the church. I'm the chief of sinners. Now, some people think that's an unhealthy thing, but I think it's a healthy thing to realize, hey, I am truly a jerk, you know, and it's the grace of God that has reached me. And the fact that he had to knock me over the head with a 2x4 to get my attention is just another way of showing me what a jerk I've been, because I should have done the right thing without him having to do that. But at least, you know, jerk that I am, I can still come to God and he forgives me, and I can rejoice in his mercy and his grace. And as far as my motives go, you know, you got to expect the devil, who's called the accuser. You know, the name Satan is Hebrew for an accuser. And in fact, the Greek word diabolos, devil, is Greek for accuser. And the devil's the accuser. He's going to come to you and say, oh, look at you. Aren't you a goody two-shoes now? You know, but you've got all the wrong motives for doing what you're doing, so you might as well give it up. And, you know, that'll take your joy away awfully quick, unless you just ignore him. Just say, listen, I'm not going to have to worry about my motives right now, because I'm, frankly, I don't even know my own heart. Paul even said that in 1 Corinthians 4. He said, it's no big thing if I'm judged by you. He says, I don't even judge myself. He says, I don't know anything against myself, but that doesn't mean I'm okay. I just don't think about myself that much, you know? I'm just going to be thinking about God. And the devil always wants to turn your attention on you and your heart and what you're doing wrong still and so forth. It's a fine thing to say, you know, I'm a sinner. It's true, I'm a sinner, but thank God. God has got a hold of me. And, you know, I can't even be sure that my motives are as pure as I would like them to be right now. But, hey, I know what direction I'm choosing. I'm choosing to follow God. And instead of worrying about my motives, I'll just keep on course. And you know what? As my own spiritual life develops more, as I develop more discernment, as I develop a keener sense of hearing the voice of God in my life, he can convict me if my motives aren't as good as they should be. But right now, I'm not going to be focused on me. I'm going to focus on God and on how I can best serve him. And yeah, probably sometime when I do a Christian thing, I'll have reason to wonder, am I doing this to impress the people around me, or am I doing this for the right motives? After I wonder it, I can put it out of my head and just keep doing the right thing and hope that my motives will become more and more pure all the time. It's the inward man that has to be renewed, and that would include your motives. Paul said, and he said this in the context of physical suffering, he said, though our outward man is perishing, our inward man is being renewed day by day. So he recognized there was a change going on inside. And that was corresponding with, you know, sufferings he was going through on the outside. The outer man was perishing, but the inner man was being renewed day by day. So let God do the renewing. I think you need to focus on just offering yourself, your heart, up to God, presenting yourself as a living sacrifice to God, saying, God, I'm yours. I'm not a very good gift to give you. I wish I could give you something better, but this is what I've got. That's all I am. And I'm glad you'll take me. And I'm not going to listen to the devil telling me that my motives are wrong, because they might be. My motives might even be wrong, but you still deserve my service and my love. And I'm just going to not worry about what the devil says about my motives. I'm just going to do all I can to make sure you get from me what you deserve.
Yeah, that's true. Now that last thing you said about the love, I think that's a key to this, because I want this. I remember even as a new Christian, so many years ago, I became a Christian and was saved because of fear. You know, I was afraid Jesus was going to return, or I was afraid that I could die or whatever. And I really still see a lot of that still left in me. And I want that fear to turn into love. And I know the Bible talks about that, being perfected in love. And, man, even after all these years, I still feel sometimes that I don't 100% love God.
Well, as you know, in 1 John 4, John says that perfect love casts out fear, and that he that fears is not yet made perfect in love. Well, then just understand, I'm not yet made perfect in love.
Yeah,
that's where I need to go. That's the direction I need to grow in. In the meantime, the fear of the Lord's the beginning of wisdom. You know, it's, you know, if I don't love God like I should, let me at least not be such a fool as to fail to fear him. You know, I mean, there's people who don't love God or fear him. Sometimes fearing God is the beginning of wisdom. It's not an advanced stage, but it's the beginning of wisdom. But when you learn of the mercy of God from your own growth in relationship with him, more and more your relationship is out of appreciation for him rather than out of fear of him. Mm-hmm. Eventually, when you're made perfect in love, it casts out all fear.
All right, that's a good word.
Michael, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your sincerity and your concern to check it out and see if you're doing the right thing. It's with God. I believe that you are, judging from what little I know of you from these conversations. But certainly we all have room to grow. And I think you probably are right that you're not made perfect in love, but that's the direction God's going to be taking you so long as you stay on his path. You'll be growing, and he's the one who'll make the growth happen. You just remain faithful.
Yeah. All right. Praise God. Thanks, Steve.
Amen, Michael. God bless you.
God bless you, brother.
Bye-bye. Good talking to you. Sue from Las Vegas, I'm afraid we only have a minute or two, but go ahead. You're our last caller today. Welcome.
Hi. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just listening to the good program. I just needed your mailing address. I don't hear it.
Okay. I usually give it at the end of the show, but I'll give it right now.
Okay. I don't always hear your program, but when I catch it, you know, I want to send something in. I just absolutely, I'm just so blessed by finding it on KKVV in Las Vegas. It is awesome.
Well, I'm blessed to have so many listeners in that area. We do.
Well,
we get a lot of calls.
I hear them.
Yeah, we get a lot of calls from Las Vegas. Well, yeah, the mailing address for this ministry is it's The Narrow Path.
Okay.
And the address is P.O. Box 1730.
Okay.
That's 1730.
Okey-doke.
The town is Temecula, California. T-E-M-E-C-U-L-A,
all right.
California. And the zip code is 92593.
92593. I thank you, Steve. I started listening to you when I heard you say that you had a change of mind about this rapture theory.
Oh, yeah.
I had pondered over this for years and years and tried to do my own research, and I had a Baptist pastor come in one day at a church I'd gone to, and he says, I got to tell everybody something. God has changed my mind after I'd taught this theory for so long.
Good for him. You know, it's hard for a man who's been teaching something, a pastor, for example, to come out and say, you know, I was wrong. In fact, that's one reason the church is not better than it is because once a man is making a living preaching a denominational viewpoint, he puts his living at risk if he changes his mind, because the denomination that hired him to preach their doctrines might say, well, you're not preaching our doctrines anymore, you're going to find another job. And as long as the ministry is professional, there will always be this danger to the minister that if he changes his mind, he might have to look for another job. And some pastors are willing to do that anyway. That is, they've got the honesty and the guts to say, you know, if I lose my job, I lose my job, but I've got to pursue the truth. Other guys don't quite have that kind of backbone. I've met both kinds, and God bless your pastor for saying that. That just shows that he wants to go on to represent the truth of God correctly. And I'm not even commenting on the correctness of his view. I'm just talking about the courage he had to make that decision. I'm out of time, however, and I appreciate your call. You've been listening to The Narrow Path radio broadcast. As I said to Sue, our address is The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. We are listener supported. That's why we give that address out. It helps us stay on the air. You can also find it at our website, thenarrowpath.com. If you live in the Santa Cruz area, I'll be there on Saturday. You can find that at the website too, thenarrowpath.com. God bless.